Hello, everyone. This is The Stark Truth with Robert Stark. My guest today is Frosty Wooldridge. Hey, Frosty, it's nice having you on the show.
Thank you, Robert.
So we can talk about your latest article, which is probably one of the most important ones. It's called The U.S. Congress Imports 100,000 Immigrants into America Every 30 Days. And you talk about, I think, with the big statistics, the numbers are they're kind of so overwhelming when you look at it by year, but I think when you narrow it down to about 100,000 when you narrow it down to 30 days, it's a better kind of a better way to look at it. It kind of reminds me of those like billboard. There's some I've seen those billboards that like lists the amount of people who die of smoking a day. If you've seen those, and I think that's sort of a yes. Makes a better, makes a more direct way to look at it.
Well, thank you, Robert. And that's true. When you look at the whole immigration package, most Americans would not even give a wink or a nod to the fact that we're adding 3 million immigrants and their children and chain migration and all that every year. It doesn't register. Most Americans, in fact, I gave a speech up in Cheyenne, Wyoming, just a week ago, and I gave the figure out, 100,000 immigrants legally immigrated into the United States every month. And that's month in and month out, decade in and decade out. And the lady said, could you please repeat that number? And I said, yes, ma'am. That's 100,000 immigrants every 30 days come into this country, and that's legally. And so she said, I had no idea. And Robert, the problem is most Americans don't realize and don't have any idea that that's what's going on. But since 1965, when Teddy Kennedy changed the course of history for the United States of America with the Immigration Reform Act of 1965, we went from about 175,000 immigrants per year, which had been going on since 1924, we jumped to about 1.2 million to as high as 1.5 million immigrants every year. And that is the reason we went from 193 million Americans back in 1963 to 300 million. In other words, we added another 105 million within 40 years by the year of 2008. And right now we're still adding and we're growing by 3.1 million per year. And that 3.1 million, you can look this up. You can go to the Pew Research Center. You can go to the U.S. Population Projections by Fogel Martin. You can go to the U.S. Census Bureau. And we will hit another 100 million people by 2035. In other words, we'll hit 400 million by 2035. And we will hit 438 million by 2050. That's only another 38 years from now. These are not numbers that are made up. These are the population's projections based on immigration into America and our own population momentum, even though we've been having 2.03 children since 1970. So that's what we face. And when you see it, 100,000 every month, every 30 days, it gives you a context. And the context is we have 14 million Americans who are out of work, 7 million Americans who are underemployed, in other words, working 20 hours a week at the most and working at very subpar rate wages. And we also have an astounding 47 million Americans who are subsisting on food stamps because they can't find a job or they can't secure a job or they have no ability to secure a job. And yet we're bringing in this 100,000 immigrants with green cards, mind you. They have green cards.
And the 100,000, that's not even taking into account the illegal aliens.
No, it's not. And so let me break it down. It's 100,000 per month of legal immigrants. And we're also, they are in turn adding 900,000 births per year. 900,000 births come into this country from all the immigrants that we have brought into this country. And that creates around 100,000, 1 million, 1.2 million plus 900,000 births gives you about 2.1 million. And then when you look at the illegal immigration, somewhere around 700,000, 800,000 are still coming in across the borders. You're looking at 3 million people added to this country. But if you want to add the other aspect of that, we add another million, just which is called population momentum. That means even though women are having only 2.03 or just two children per woman in this country since 1970, since we're at 300 million, it's called population momentum. It just keeps the wave just keeps pushing and rushing over. We add another million ourselves. So no matter how you look at it and no matter how you cut it, we are adding somewhere around 3 million, 3.5 million, give or take, every year. If you just do the math, take that out around, another 25 years times that number, and or 38 years times that number. Problem is they all require water, they require food, they require energy to warm themselves, transport themselves, and of course they require resources. And we are running out of resources. We're certainly seeing water shortages because our reservoirs are being overloaded. And we're also seeing the consequences of dropping of quality of life and certainly the standard of living as wages continue to either go down or stagnate because of this massive population loading of our country. So as you can see, it's just not a small thing. It's a major situation facing us. And the more Americans understand and they see 100,000 immigrants added to this country every 30 days, shipped in, and unfortunately, they're shipped in from a line. 10 million sign up to come to America every year, and there's 80 million more new babies on the planet added, net gain every year. So you can see that immigration is futile. It doesn't solve anything. It doesn't change anything, but it makes our country more unsustainable. And certainly it makes it a lot worse. And one of the great quotes, Robert, is by Dr. Otis Graham. I know him personally, have for 10 years. He wrote the book Unguarded Gates. And he said, and I'm quoting, "Most Western elites continue urging the wealthy West not to stem the migrant tide that adds 80 million net gain annually to the planet, but to absorb our global brothers and sisters until their horrid ordeal has been endured and shared by all. 10 billion, B as in boy, billion humans packed onto an ecologically devastated planet," unquote. That's what we're facing. And what I try to do as I speak across the country and write is that we don't have to go there. We don't have to follow the course of China or India or Bangladesh or Mexico, because we haven't since 1970 because we've been having two children. All we really have to do is have a moratorium on all immigration into this country for 5 or 10 years to get our house in order, employ our own people at a living wage. And guess what? Americans will do a job, any job, with a living wage, always have. And the key is that after the moratorium, we could take on not 100,000 immigrants per 30 days, only 100,000 per year, a total of 100,000 immigrants per year legally. And that the reason for that is because 100,000 people actually egress the United States every year. So that would give us a zero net gain. And then we could move our country and this civilization toward a stable future and a viable future and a sustainable future, Robert.
And this issue is it's never even discussed in the media or any political debates. I mean, if it is brought up, you hear people like, well, you hear Mitt Romney. And a lot of the Republicans will say this: we're against illegal immigration, but only because it's illegal. But if millions of people want to pour in legally, it's perfectly fine. And now they're not even saying that. I mean, I know all the big mainstream conservatives, like Sean Hannity, for instance, they're coming out in favor of amnesty now.
Well, that's correct. And as a matter of fact, in 2007, U.S. Congressman Barack Obama at the time actually voted for George Bush's comprehensive immigration reform. And the caveat to all of that was not only would it would allow 20 million illegal migrants to immediately gain U.S. citizenship and validity in our country, Barack Obama also voted to double the legal immigration rates up to 3 million per year. And so what that would do is flood the country even faster, because it would then allow even more chain migration. You have to understand that all these immigrants, and there's about almost 40 million foreign-born immigrants in our country right now, the greatest number ever in the history of this country. And of course, they came in since 1965, and they are making humongous impact. But if we, because they've chain migrated all of their families for family reunification. So if you then give an amnesty to these 20 million that are here now, they will be able to import 10 each of their own immediate family, so that that 20 million will just think 20 million and then add another 10 times the 20 million. So you can see that these numbers are going to be horrific with any kind of an amnesty. And to tell you the truth, Roy Beck of numbersusa.org has a 10-minute video that I would ask everyone to look at. It's Immigration by the Numbers Off the Charts, and it's a 10-minute video. And what it will do is show you how and what happens and how we're all facing unbelievable infrastructure, water, energy, resource consequences if we continue on this path. And he shows it by his incredible gumball demonstration, but he also shows it by pure graphs that we're on our way in this country from the current 315 million to double it by around 2090. That's only what, 80, 78 years from now, to 625 million in this country. So that means we're going to add three more Californias to this country. Three more Californias, that's 38 million in California. So we're going to add three more Californias, essentially. What are we going to, how many cities would that be? That would be 65 new Denver, Colorados. Denver, Colorado, where I live, has 2.2 million. And what that means is we're going to have to try to support 138 million and then up to, added to 438 million, then 438 million will then go to 538 million, which will go to 625 million from Roy Beck's charts and those projections. And I hate to say this, ladies and gentlemen, but our country will simply not be able to sustain that number and allow you to live at the current standard of living and quality of life. And I have traveled all over the world. You might want to call me a bicycling Galileo of the 21st century. I've already seen what's coming. It's not pretty in China. It's not pretty in Mexico City. It's not pretty in Asia, Bangladesh, Indochina. It's just people stuffed wall to wall, gills to gills around this world. And what I'm hoping is that we have a consciousness shift, which means you get educated by a program like this on Robert Stark's show, and that you understand the reality of it. And then you have a critical mass shift. Enough of us take action. Join numbersusa.org or capsweb.org, C-A-P-S-W-E-B. That's Californians for Population Stabilization. And then FAIR, F-A-I-R, Federation for American Immigration Reform, which I'm a board member. I'm a member of the board of directors. And also thesocialcontract.com. Those four organizations, and there's four or five more out there, Alley Pack, Fire Coalition, Grass Fire, and so forth. But you've got to be part of the action. In other words, critical mass means you take action, and then you create a tipping point. And the tipping point is, we can go in a positive mode, such as somebody like Switzerland, who doesn't allow, or even New Zealand, they don't allow immigration, or Japan, or even China doesn't allow immigration, to give a positive future. But if we continue on the path we're going, it will be a negative tipping point, and we'll become completely unsustainable in this century. Everybody will live as they live in Asia, which is really ugly on so many levels. And we just don't have to do that. And so that's why I spend all of this time to try to educate people, send you to these websites where you can become a member. NumbersUSA.org has about 1.2 or 3 million. CAPS Web has members all over the country. FAIR has 250,000 people. And the key is that we start a national dialogue, a national discussion. And that national discussion is to get the borders secured from illegal immigration, reduce all legal immigration, and simply give ourselves a chance. And all people that live here right now, immigrants, black, white, brown, red, it doesn't make any difference. Mother Nature doesn't care what color of skin or what you speak or what religion you are. If there are too many of you, Mother Nature simply takes you out through starvation or water shortages or environmental consequences like Sandy or Katrina, etc. So we're in a precarious situation in the 21st century, and the only way to get out of it or survive it is to stabilize our numbers, stabilize our resource usage, our water usage, and our energy usage, if we hope to survive as a civilization, Robert.
So with the thing about the media is you have tried to get on a lot of the mainstream media talk shows, and you said that not even Lou Dobbs would discuss this issue.
That's correct. Lou Dobbs would not discuss this issue. I had sent him my two books, Immigration's Unarmed Invasion, Deadly Consequences. I sent him my other book, America on the Brink, the next added 100 million Americans, which has been endorsed by some top people, Dr. Albert Bartlett, Governor Lamb, Richard Heinberg, quite a few. I have been on George Norrie Coast to Coast. I received 2,400 emails within 10 hours of being on that show thanking me about bringing up the population issue. Charlie Rose won't touch this issue. Brian Williams won't touch it. Neil Conan at NPR won't touch it. Terry Gross at NPR won't touch it. Robert Siegel won't touch it. Steve Inskeep won't touch it. I've tried to get on 60 Minutes with Scott Pelley, Neil Simon, certainly Leslie Stahl. I've all written them perfectly excellent letters with graphs and figures showing that there's no way to escape this thing if we don't do something to change course. And yet all of them, I even used to write Andy Rooney before he went out. And I said, hey, you've got grandkids. You got great grandkids. Let's talk about the population issue. But unfortunately, there is some big hand with big money that is absolutely censoring any discussion on a human overpopulation here in the United States as if it's a problem out there in other countries. And there's just no mention of the consequences that we're already facing. And we somehow seem to think that we're immune to this problem. As a matter of fact, Robert, I write for about 15 different websites. And it's amazing when I start writing about overpopulation, it just gets emotional. I mean, people come out of the woodwork. Wow, this Frosty Wooldridge, he's a hate monger. He's a Chicken Little. He's this, that, and the next thing. And he's a nativist. He's a xenophobe. And I'm none of those things. I'm a mathematics teacher. I have seen what's coming. The fact is, every airplane has a load limit. It has a number of seats, and they cannot have one single more person on that plane. That's a load limit.
Use the elevator analogy.
Oh, yes. Yes, the elevator. You know, everybody wants to go up in the elevator to get to whatever floor they want, and they all get squished and crunched on, and then at some point you've got to close the doors. Well, I say let's have the elevator be loaded with a normal amount of people so it doesn't exceed the load limit, doesn't exceed the weight limit, so that everybody can enjoy a nice ride to whatever floor they're getting on, going to, and have a pleasant experience. In other words, let's have a stable, sustainable population here in the United States, hopefully lead the rest of the world toward the same thing. And then we can all have a really nice life with a quality of life and a standard of living that we enjoy instead of the dregs of humanity that they live in places like Bangladesh and places like Mexico and places like Brazil and in São Paulo, where the environment is poisoned, the water's poisoned, the food's poisoned, and people live at the very bottom of the ladder, especially places like China and India.
And I think the problem really with this country is that people have this mentality that that things like land and natural resources are unlimited, and they take that for granted, or they have this idea that we've always been a country of immigrants, but it's based on this idea that we can have unlimited growth because of the way it's kind of, and that's unique, pretty much fairly unique about this country, that we can, that mentality that we can continue growing indefinitely.
Well, that's correct. You know, and let me take you back to the 16th century and Galileo. He actually came up with a new understanding about the fact that the sun did not revolve around the earth, but in fact, the earth revolved around the sun along with the planets, and that the earth wasn't part of the center of the universe. But the predominant paradigm at the time was the Pope, and the Pope put him under house arrest, threw him in jail, and made him recant. He had to recant the facts. Well, I won't recant the facts. The facts are we can't keep growing population. In fact, you can go to growthbusters.com. Dave Gardner, a man I work with in Colorado Springs, has a fantastic new movie out. It's called Growthbusters. And go to growthbusters.com and you'll understand from all 10, about 15 of the top PhD experts in the world that doesn't make any difference if we are a country of immigrants. That was then. This is now. We used to be 75 million people back in 1900. That's all we had, was 75 million people. And we just started using the cars at that time. And so we didn't have air pollution back then. We didn't have an energy crisis back then. And gasoline was 9 or 10 cents a gallon. We didn't have Velcro back then. So to sit here and say that we're a country of immigrants doesn't cut it in the 21st century. What we are is a full boat. We are a fully loaded, overloaded Titanic, if you will. And if you want to keep putting more people on the Titanic, that just means more people are going to die or become survivors in a very miserably cold North Atlantic. And so instead of saying we're a nation of immigrants, let's say that we are a nation of intelligent human beings of all races, creeds, and colors and religions, and that we need to move toward a sustainable civilization. And that means we need to have a moratorium on all immigration, and we need to reduce it to less than 100,000 per year. And then that means other civilizations will have to use birth control and family planning so that they can bring their civilizations into balance and sustainability with the planet and with the water and the land and the food resources that they have in their own countries. Because in the end, there's no way the United States can keep taking on immigrants. It's a burned out idea. It no longer applies. It's like trying to drive a Model T Ford on a 2012 Interstate Expressway. The Model T can't go 75 miles an hour. So are we a land of Model Ts? Well, we once were, but we're no longer a Model T nation. We're a nation that's got too many people. It's using up too many resources. It's burning way too much energy. And we are already, it's not about how much space we have. It's about carrying capacity, how much water we have, how much energy we have to warm ourselves and transport ourselves, and how much resources to fill your cell phone or make a TV set. And the more we add people, the less and less we will have, all of us, and we will degrade ourselves beyond recognition if we continue on this path, Robert.
So we could talk about this article you wrote. I think it's, what's the one over on Rents called, Suppose You Were an Idiot? And it talks about the same town hall meeting you had in Cheyenne, Wyoming, where you brought up this issue. But you mentioned something about a Ron Paul's farewell speech about the five dangers to our republic.
Yes, I did. I gave a speech up in Cheyenne, Wyoming a week ago at the town hall. And when I brought up that point where we're bringing in 100,000 immigrants every 30 days, one of the ladies in the crowd said, Mike, could you please repeat that figure? And when I did, she said, I had no idea. And I'll bet many of the people listening to this program, if they haven't heard me before, would also just be shocked out of their mind to appreciate that we're bringing in 100,000 immigrants every 30 days into the United States. It's just some, it's a figure that most people just don't even blink. They just, it does, they just don't even know it's happening. And anyway, as Ron Paul, from the Texas congressman.
With Ron Paul, he doesn't necessarily, he doesn't really address the main issues you talk about either.
No, he doesn't. As a matter of fact, he again, have to understand this, Robert, and everyone listening. Most people over the age of 70, and Ron Paul is 72 or 3 or 4, and all these, Charles Schumer of New York, or Orrin Hatch, or even Boxer and Feinstein of California, because they're all over 60, 65, 70, they're all really old people. Same with John McCain, just so old, he doesn't really know what's going on. These people don't understand population dynamics. They have no understanding of scarcity of resources, scarcity of water, scarcity of petroleum. And so they go along their merry way without taking any action to change course. That's why when you look at the Congress, it simply doesn't understand the consequences that it's building for all of the citizens of this country. And so Congressman Ron Paul actually didn't have any kind, he was a libertarian, and he thought that immigration would just figure itself out. Well, it's not going to figure itself out. And population growth is not going to figure itself out. And it's not all going to come into some kind of a warm romantic denouement that everybody gets to have a nice house and a nice garden and drive their car forever. It's called the illusion of permanency. And that illusion is what somebody like a Ron Paul would have, somebody like a John McCain would have, or a Charles Schumer, or any of all these older, plus 65, plus 70 Congress critters. They don't really understand the consequences of global climate destabilization. It's just not in their mental, intellectual capacity.
And you call Ron Paul the most reasonable man in Congress in comparison.
Right. Yeah, he's one of the more reasonable ones because he said, let's get out of all these foreign wars. I mean, the fact is the United States started the Korean War. It had no business being in the Korean War, lost 33,000 kids, caused unbelievable debt, and stuck its nose into somebody else's business, and it didn't change anything. The Vietnam War, again, the military-industrial complex created that war, and Dwight D. Eisenhower warned against it. Well, Ron Paul is saying, why are we out fighting all these wars? The Iraq War was a created war by none other than George Bush and the military-industrial complex that was prodding him on. And the same thing with Afghanistan. Why would anybody in their right mind maintain and continue a war for 11 solid years over in Afghanistan when it's doing absolutely nothing to further our security or our safety, and yet it's already spent $1 trillion that we will never be able to recover, and it's done nothing for our security or otherwise? Well, he was pretty sharp about that. So he had good things to say. And let me go back to what we've done to ourselves with the $16 trillion debt. The second president, and I just read his biography, John Adams, he said, and I quote, there are two ways to defeat a country, by the sword and by debt, unquote. Ladies and gentlemen, we're $16 trillion in debt. We are on our way. The projections are that this President Obama will get us another $4 trillion in debt before he's done. We'll be $20 trillion in debt within the next 4 years. And at some point, that is going to collapse our U.S. dollar and our stability economically and our ability to maintain a stable financial country. And if you can't maintain a stable, in other words, if you're somebody that overspent your credit card or you wrote too many checks on your bank account that didn't have the money in them, guess what? Your bank account will be closed down for you, whether you like it or not, your credit card will be canceled and you will go to debtors. You can go to jail because you didn't pay your debt.
And you won't get and they won't give you a bailout like they did the Wall Street either.
That's exactly right. At some point, there's no way to give a bailout to all of America because there's nobody going to give us a bailout, period. So all of these things that are happening, again, 435 characters up there in Congress don't realize the consequences, and they certainly don't realize the ramifications of adding another 138 million people to this country. So Ron Paul didn't either and doesn't right now because of his age. That's why, you know, Thomas Jefferson wanted term limits, and I wish the heck he would have gotten them, because we really don't need John McCain's in there or Charles Schumer's or Robert Byrd's, who was there till 92, I think. And Strom Thurmond was there till 96 or 98. All these guys are dying in office. They're not capable of carrying on the people's business. And that's why we should have a maximum of 8 years or maybe 12 years in the U.S. Senate and the Congress. And then you're out. Go back to being a citizen, because these career politicians are just a waste of taxpayer money, and they do not bring this republic forward. We really need. But of course, you know, once they get into the club, the Congress and the Senate of the United States, they don't want term limits because they love all the money, all the power, and all the prestige and so forth, whether they're doing the job or not. And as you can tell, in the last 4 years, this president has failed miserably to do anything positive for this country. Essentially, it put us $4 trillion more dollars in debt and didn't get us out of the wars, finally got us out of Iraq. And yet we're still spending billions and billions in Iraq and Afghanistan with aid and so forth. So it's ironic that we reelected somebody who had a failed presidency and think that he's going to change and become a successful one in the next 4 years. But that's another question. My thrust here is the fact that we are on a collision course with our own numbers, and either we solve it by having a moratorium on all immigration and then a very reduced level of immigration, 100,000 per year, or we're simply going to be collapsing on many areas of environment, of quality of life, standard of living, sociologically. We're going to have balkanization of our country, and it's not going to be solvable at some point.
And there's probably going to see a lot more ethnic conflicts in the future, because when you have people competing over limited resources, conflicts are basically inevitable. And you can say, and people can say whatever they want about trying to improve race relations by having more understanding between the people. But if there's a scarcity of resources, then none of that matters. I mean, some kind of more hostility between different ethnic groups is inevitable.
Well, unfortunately, that's true. Let me have you some background from my teaching past. I actually taught in the inner city for 2 years. And one of the things I learned about the inner city and teaching with minorities is that, unfortunately, there is a lack of intellectual propensity. In other words, children that are in the inner cities, their parents are very often very limited education themselves. In fact, illiterate. There are 42 million Americans who are functionally illiterate. They can't read, they can't write, they can't perform simple math. And in the inner cities, the greatest the numbers of those exist. And the cyclical poverty stems from the fact of illiteracy, lack of education, or the lack of trying to be educated. And in fact, you'll see in the inner cities of most big cities, there's a 50 to 76% dropout flunkout rate. So here we have a first world country, but we've got all these people who are functionally illiterate. In fact, Brian Williams on NBC stated that 76% dropout flunkout rate in the Detroit public schools. Well, guess what? Detroit's overrun with immigrants from third world countries. Chicago's the same in Los Angeles, the same in Houston. These kids, as soon as they hit 16, are dropping out. In fact,
are you talking about mostly the immigrant kids or the lower income ones that are, or both? Basically, both.
Both immigrant kids and minority kids, and the average figure as brought out by CNN is 7,000 high school kids drop out of high school every single day, one every 26 seconds. And about 1.2 million per year hit the streets at the age of 18, completely and totally functionally illiterate. And so you then have, again, 42 million Americans who are functionally illiterate. You've got 47 million Americans who are existing on food stamps. And so when it comes to the four different ethnic groups in this country that are going to be battling for food and water and jobs, you've got the Black tribe or the African-American tribe, which is really losing out to all the immigrants right now, because the African-American tribe in this country has the most poverty. It's got the most illiteracy. It's got the most. In fact, I'll give you an example. 68% of all African-American children, according to Dottie Lamb, who's the wife of Governor Lamb of Colorado, she wrote the piece in the Denver Post, 68% of African-American children are brought up by a single mother. Get that number, because it's pretty ominous. And 99% of those mothers are on welfare, live on welfare. In other words, live off of your tax dollars. Those numbers are going to continue to climb, because that kind of intractable poverty just continues to procreate itself. So you've got the African-American
side. So there, you're saying there's incentives to have illegitimate children.
Oh, yeah. It's a free ride. I remember when I worked in Detroit 15, 20 years ago, one African-American woman had 24 children, all of them on it's called age-dependent children. WIC, another one. Anyway, that mother had 24 children, and her first three kids were actually pregnant by the time they were 15. And she had a Cadillac, and she had TVs, and she had a big house, and she had 24 kids. And so, yes, we are paying these poor women to have kids. In fact, they have so many kids, they farm them off to their grandmothers, who then become foster parents, and then they get paid even more money to bring up their own children as a foster child. So anyway, you have the African-American condition and situation. You then have the Spanish, Mexican, Hispanic situation, which is another tribe, and it's competing in California and in Arizona and in Texas right now and in New Mexico. Literally, by sheer birthright numbers, there are more Mexican children being born in California now than there are European Caucasian Americans, so that California is literally changing its demographic. So you then have the third competing culture, which is only 7 million, but growing to 20 million within the next 30 years. And that's the Muslim, Arab, Middle Eastern immigrant contingent. And that's a very, very aggressive ethnic group, religious group. And then, of course, you still have 54% of the country is about is a European Caucasian American. So we have four different groups. Then you have, of course, the American Indians, and you've got Asians and so forth. All of them, again, competing for housing, competing for jobs, competing for just about everything you can imagine. And as our gasoline goes to $5, $6, $7, $8, $9, $10 a gallon, and jobs continue to pay less and less money, you're going to see the standard of living and certainly the quality of life lower and degrade as we have less and less energy, less and less water, less and less quality housing, less and less clean air, less and less resources. So you can see when the picture I'm painting is just what's coming. And what I'm hoping is we change that path, as Roy Beck has said, and shut these borders down, stop mass immigration, and give all of our citizens, black, white, brown, red, yellow, I don't care. We're all in the family of humanity. I'm a person who respects all races, creeds, and colors simply because I've traveled all over the world, and I know that everyone is doing the best they can. But it's not going to be very good to do the best you can when you don't have water to drink, or you don't have heat to warm your home, or electricity that you can afford, or gasoline to power a car, or even public transport. So as I've said many times, the more extreme our numbers, the more extreme our children's consequences. Robert, somebody's going to pay for this massive population overloading. And it's just a matter of time. And so that's why we need to change course.
So you wrote about the UN mandate, Agenda 21. Mm-hmm. It's interesting you brought this up in this article. You're totally against this because it would be a big it would violate our national sovereignty by an international body, which is we like the, such as the United Nations. But what's interesting is the other thing is it's very trendy in the Patriot movement to say anyone who advocates like sustainability is part of this agenda. And I think you said you were on one of those Patriot radio shows. Was it on RBN where the guest where you sort of got into it with the host of that show about this?
That's correct. Actually, I got into it on Freedom Fighters Radio, which is what they did was attack me. And they said I was an Agenda 21 advocate and I was a whole bunch of things. And they didn't like that. And the problem with Agenda 21 is that the UN has no business in anybody else's business. They don't really do much that's worthwhile around the planet anyway, and they just suck up a lot of money from the nations who throw money at them. And what they keep saying is that we can keep sustainable growth. Well, you can't. That's an oxymoron. In other words, can a 450-pound man who can hardly walk, should he sustainably add another 100 pounds so that he'll be better off, so that he's 550 pounds? That's what sustainable growth is all about. Well, if you get him up to 550 pounds, then you can sustainably grow him to 650 pounds. Well, as you can see, at some point, his whole system breaks down. He won't be able to walk. He won't be able to breathe. He'll have a heart attack. His arteries are clogged and so forth. Well, sustainable growth is not possible. And so what the UN needs to do is talk about stabilized population. Stabilized population brought about by family planning and, of course, birth control. And that's what I advocate, is that the human race has got to go past the Pope, because the Pope is an intellectual troglodyte. And I put that nicely. The Pope is out of touch with the 21st century. He is against condoms. He's against birth control. He's against abortion at the back end of that. And he's the cause and the reason for it, especially in all these Catholic-dominated third world countries. I don't know if anybody knows it or not, but 46 million women every year become pregnant, didn't want to become pregnant, didn't have the use of birth control, and so they choose abortions. And they're Catholic, and they're Muslim, and they're Baptist, and they're Methodist, and they're everything else. And they choose abortion. And the reason they choose abortion is they can't feed, they can't house, they can't care, they can't support that child. And yet the Catholic Church, again, run by a bunch of old men, again, intellectual troglodytes, and the Pope himself, how in touch with the 21st century is a 78 or 79-year-old man that is called the Pope? And all those bishops and cardinals, I mean, they're so far out of touch with what's going on this planet, it's not even funny. And yet they have so much power to shut down birth control. So, again, the UN, it wants us to keep adding more people and stack us high and run us up into giant cathedral apartment buildings.
And that's the other... that's the other thing about the Patriot movement. I think I heard some of the conspiracy shows. They think or they say people like who want to advocate birth population control in Africa are some part of some kind of a conspiracy to depopulate the world, or they bring up stuff like the Georgia Guidestones and all that.
Well, you know, everybody likes to get emotional, and when you start getting around religious people, they get even more emotional. I mean, and emotions don't have any common sense. They have no rational thinking. And religions, for the most part, in this in the world today, there's a few others. There's a few that are coming into the 21st century, like the Church of Science of Mind and Spirit that Ernest Holmes started back in 1920. It's a pretty reasonable philosophical approach. But when you look at all these other religions, they're just stuck in the first century. They're stuck in the sixth century. I mean, if you look at the Muslim religion, I mean, it treats its women less status than its dogs. It still continues female genital mutilation, which just mutilates a young girl. It has forced marriages, arranged marriages of 12-year-olds to 40-year-olds. It's got honor killings. I mean, it's an absolutely barbaric religion, and yet it has 1.5 billion people on the planet adhere to it. And women in America, if they knew what Muslims do and how they operate and how the men operate, I mean, you'd throw them all in jail because they're a menace to humanity. But so you've got these religions out there, and they've got so much power, but no common sense, no reasoned thought. I mean, can anybody? The Pope went into Africa, and he said the Africans shouldn't use condoms. And yet Africa has got millions. I mean, over 15 million Africans have died of AIDS. Had they used condoms, if they had birth control and condoms, they would have had a chance to give themselves life and bring the AIDS epidemic under control. And the real tragedy for Africa right now is that it has about 1 billion people. But the latest projections for Africa is it's going to hit 3.1 billion before the end of this century. That's 88 years from now. Africa will go from 1 billion to 3 billion. Tell me, anybody out there, do you think that the animals have a chance? Do you think even the humans have a chance if Africa continues toward a 3 billion population?
Yeah, it would wipe out, you would see massive extinction of the wildlife.
You got it.
And the immigration problem is going to be even worse because all those people are going to be trying to flood into Europe.
Well, and they are right now. Spain's being overrun by Morocco. Algiers and all of those African nations can't feed these people. Libyans and Egyptians are flooding into Italy right now, into Greece right now. When I was over there just a couple of years ago, the Greeks are just, these immigrants are just lining up on the shorelines. Some of the top experts show that there will be 50 million refugees trying to flood into Western countries here in the next 10 years. 50 million. Robert, these numbers are so huge. They're so massive. They're almost, you almost have to shut your ears down to try to just keep yourself sane. But the fact is, if we don't do something, if we keep on this path, the United States is just as vulnerable to this massive human armada as anyone else is. And that's why I speak up. And I don't care how many people throw how many names they want. I'm a rational, logical, experienced world traveler, Galileo of the 21st century. I know and have seen what's coming. And somebody's got to speak up, because you won't hear this from Diane Sawyer or Scott Pelley or Scott Simon or Leslie Stahl or Steve Croft. Or Lara Logan. You won't hear this from Robert Siegel. You won't hear it from Terry Gross. They run from the subject of overpopulation in America. But no matter how many people say disparaging things, I have the integrity and the knowledge and the articulate ability to express it. And I will stand up, because somebody stood up back in 1776, name of Ben Franklin, Dolly Madison, Abigail Adams, Ben Franklin, and Thomas Jefferson and George Washington. That was their watch. That was their time. And I'm one of those people that feels very strongly that in order for this civilization to function and further itself in the 21st century, you need somebody like a Frosty Wooldridge or a Dr. Jack Alpert or a Dr. Albert Bartlett or any of the William Ryerson or Dr. Diana Hull or Kathleen Parker. These are the people standing up on our watch, men and women, and I'm proud to stand with them. Governor Lamb, Dottie Lamb, and the key is more of us need to stand up. Roy Beck is brilliant. William Ryerson is brilliant. Joe Bish is brilliant. David Paxson of worldpopulationbalance.com. So the key is we need more people standing up, and we need more support. And as I've said, I hope more and more people join numbersusa.org, join capsweb.org, join the socialcontract.com, and certainly fairus.org, which is a Federation for American Immigration Reform. And we can change this thing, Robert. We can change course. It's not a done deal. We're not already 30. We're not 38 years, ahead right now. We're still in 2012. We can change course. And it's my life mission is to educate and to activate and to change course. And I can't do it by myself, but I can do it with you, and I can do it with everyone that takes action as they understand it and appreciate what we're facing, and then join, become collectively powerful through these organizations that I endorse.
Frosty Wooldridge, I'd like to thank you for being on the show.
Thank you, Robert.
That's all we have for today's show, so take care, and we'll be back with you next time.